Madam, we're taking a poll. Can you tell us the name of your congressman?
My congressman?
Yes.
Well, I... Now, let's see. Would it be... No, he's from Kentucky. Wait now. How about... No. I'm sorry, I'm awfully busy right now. Could you come back when my husband comes home?
Out of every 100 Americans questioned, almost two-thirds of our voting population showed in the survey that they did not know the name of their own congressman. Living 1951, brought to you each week at this time by a special program unit of NBC, pauses today to consider the lot of the men you send to Washington. We dramatize the special problems of their jobs, and we bring you actual recorded testimony of Vice President Barclay and some of his colleagues in a drama document entitled The People's Choice. Your narrator, Ben Grauer.
And a cordial greeting to you, America. You may not know who he is, but at least you should know what he does. And so we propose to take you behind the scenes for a glimpse of the world populated by those figures in public life whom we address as Mr. Senator and Mr. Congressman. Most of us remember from our civic books the essential facts that for the past 162 years we have sent to the legislative body of our federal government two senators from each of the states and, as of this year, 1951, 435 members to our House of Representatives. And recently, we've had a new and glaring kind of spotlight on certain of their activities.
Now then, will you tell this committee whether or not you were associated with the racketeer in question?
Well, Congressman, I...
Come now, the people want to know, and as their representatives, we intend to find out. Will you answer the question?
I refuse to answer on the grounds that it may incriminate me.
Yes, through the Senate's televised hearings on crime, through radio broadcasts, through the congressional investigation of subversive activities, through the headlines born of the dramatic MacArthur hearings, the life of the congressman is daily made to seem both exciting and dramatic. But for a more accurate appraisal of what a congressman's life is really like, we should see something of the daily drudgery of legislative housekeeping, the congressional routine for which the people's choice seldom receives either thanks or credit. Indeed, as far back as 1882, Congressman Blaine of Maine remarked,
"There is no test of a man's ability in any department of public life more severe than service in the House of Representatives. There is no place where so little deference is paid to reputation previously acquired or to eminence won outside. What a man gains in the House, he gains by sheer force of his own character. And if he loses, he must expect no mercy and will receive no sympathy.
For what they put up with America, each one of us, man, woman, and child, pays for the support of our senators and congressmen. Just 2 cents a day. And what do we get in return? Here's one man's opinion.
A congressman is a sort of a national whipping boy. People blame him for high taxes, bad business, poor crops, or just rheumatism.
Those are words once spoken by Missouri's representative, Huey Short. Yet apparently, Mr. Short and his colleagues wanted the job. Let us then take a closer look at the men who elected to run and were elected to be your congressman, America. Who are they? What is expected of them? How well do they manage? Because life for them appears to be a constant battle for one bill or against another, let's take ourselves to the political ringside for a typical introduction.
with statistical asides based on the 80th Congress, to your typical congressman.
In this corner, weighing
185 pounds.
Age
54 and a half years.
Education,
probably college educated. 75% college degrees, with 11% of the Senate, 3% of the House, Phi Beta Kappa. Almost without exception, attended high school.
Profession?
Likelihood, attorney at law.
Family?
Wife and two children.
Church?
Chances are, Protestant.
With the following record.
Reads 18 books a year of the thoughtful, nonfiction type. Likes fishing and golf. Smokes. Dresses conservatively. Is a homeowner. Has trouble, like most of us, saving on his salary.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you your typical American congressman.
Your typical congressman, America, with hobbies ranging from collecting elephants and donkeys to him singing. And coming to Washington from activities in his own home state as varied as
lawyer, farmer, publisher, reporter, sheriff, butcher, baker, school teacher, plumber, businessman, architect, flour miller, housewife, football coach, dentist, minister.
And if you were to seek out amongst these men Senator Kenneth Spicer Huery of Nebraska, floor leader of the GOP, and ask him to chart for you one man's route to Congress, his own, he might well trace it for you something like this.
Before I got to the Senate, I was at different times a farmer, a merchant, a lawyer, mayor, councilman, state legislator, auto salesman, auctioneer, county fair promoter, and Republican state chairman.
But even with all this, Senator Huery could not boast that most prized asset of all in political life. That belongs to millionaire Senator Kerr of Oklahoma.
I was born in a log cabin.
Seven out of 32 presidents of these United States have served their apprenticeship in Congress, America. And considering the importance of the congressman's legislative function, the power we delegate to him under the Constitution, his own importance to the national leadership, either actual or potential, the salary that we pay him is not high.
Suppose I'm a representative. Like my fellow congressman, you pay me $12,500 a year. In addition to $2,500 a year that you allow me tax-free to help me defray the expenses connected with my duties. To pay for the clerks we need to hire to accomplish our work, we receive $12,500 more. Plus small sums for stationery, airmail, special delivery stamps, and telephone and telegraph service.
Sounds like plenty, you say? Well, listen to the actual voice of Senator Hubert Humphrey of Minnesota as he addressed a committee hearing.
Well, let's assume that we're a member of the House, or here we are members of the Senate. We have an income. To be very frank with you, how are you going to travel, let's assume, back to Minneapolis, Minnesota, as often as you want to if you are a representative from Minnesota, at a cost of $200 a minimum a trip, unless you grouse off the land like the Russian army en route? I mean, that's what it amounts to. Now, I want to just put the temptations up. Here you are with four children. You're trying to bring up a family. You're trying to be a United States senator. You've got unlimited expenditures. People are calling upon you for contributions and donations, and you can't. And the Senate, in its great move for economy, doesn't even provide the staff or the paper or the pencils that it ought to provide for its own work. And then you're supposed to somehow or another be as pure as ivory soap and not even accept a contribution or a donation or a fee as you go about the country. Now, I personally don't like to do this, but I'm going to be quite candid. I either have the choice of making a few dollars in a speech now and then or getting out of the United States Senate.
That's one senator's story. Now, how about some more particulars?
My long-distance phone bill alone comes to $50 or $80 a month.
And there's always this to consider.
Excuse me, Mr. Congressman.
Oh, yes, Elizabeth. What is it? I'm busy.
That delegation from home that wanted to see you about the new highway.
Oh, yes. I said I'd take them to lunch.
How many did you plan on?
Oh, a couple. Why?
I hate to tell you this, Congressman, but there are 9 voters waiting out there for you, and they all look hungry.
Like any other cross-section of American society, the rows of Congress list a few men whose private fortunes happily free them from any concern about how many guests show up for lunch. But most congressmen confronted not only with this kind of sudden and unexpected expense, but also with many more which can be predicted and itemized, find that their salaries and allowances barely cover the cost of living. Indeed, there's a story in Washington about how one congressman once solved the Washington housing problem.
Well, that's it, Congressman. How do you think you like this suite for your office?
Not bad, not bad. That room in there is well aired. Got hot and cold running water. Could hook up a small electric stove easily.
Yes. Well, now, we've arranged with some of our better hotels to reserve rooms for congressmen. Now, if you'd tell me just where you'd like to live, why...
Live? What's wrong with right here?
Here? But, Congressman, these are office quarters.
Son, as far as I'm concerned, this is going to be my office and home, too. I've slept on a lot worse than this couch in my day.
P.S., that congressman was a bachelor. And if his decision to stay in his office all the way round the clock was unconventional, it was not entirely impractical. For, as Senator Herbert Lehman of New York once put it,
in Washington, almost each day is a race against the hour hand.
That you may hear from one who speaks from experience how a congressman races through a typical 24 hours, we placed our microphone before the Honorable Hugh D. Scott, Jr. of Pennsylvania, and asked him to describe his schedule for you in his own words. Ladies and gentlemen, my day, as recorded for us in person by Congressman Hugh Scott.
A congressman's day is always a race against the clock. I sometimes think it would take 2 clocks to keep up with me. A typical day begins by reading the morning papers over the breakfast table to be sure I know something of what's going on. Arrival at the office, look over the mail, usually somewhere from 75 to 150 letters. Committee sessions run from 10 to 12 in the morning when we hear testimony on legislation. The House meets at 12. There are various quorum calls, roll calls, a luncheon at which you usually have a constituent or more visiting with you, and somehow they seem to renegotiate our salary. I never did know why it is the congressman is expected to pick up the check. Then in the afternoon, there are debates, and perhaps I may have a special order, meaning that I'm engaging in the debate myself. It's necessary to race back to the office, which is about 3 blocks away, some 3 or 4 times in an afternoon, to see constituents who may want any one of 1,000 things. Then a good deal of time is taken up in research and in the preparation of legislative matters and determination of how I'm going to stand and whether I'm going to have anything to say about the legislation, perhaps correcting the transcript of some speech made on the floor. There are usually an average of 6 or 8 long-distance calls a day. I leave the office at about 7 at night and have dinner with or without some visitors. And then in the evening, it's necessary to read articles, congressional record, or magazine items, which there hasn't been time to read during the day, and so to bed.
Congressman Scott points out, a congressman's job is no longer as leisurely as it was when Congress first met in 1789. The first Congress put on the books...
carried.
Only 118 laws. Today, it's not uncommon for Congress to pass in a single session...
carried.
Over 500 laws. And to help it do its job, Congress must employ over 3,000 people and hire...
I can see now. I'm going to have to get the congressman another waste paper basket.
Cleaning women. Yes, Congress has a staff of more than 200 cleaning women to do the sweeping up. As one day melts into the next, the congressman confronts his strenuous job like David confronting Goliath without a slingshot.
keeping up with legislation is an appalling task by itself. As Senator Lehman wrote in the New York Times not long ago,
many of these bills are of vast complexity, some running almost 400 pages. In the Senate alone, more than 3,000 bills and resolutions have been presented this session.
Not only should a congressman be intelligently aware of new bills and their content, he must also be prepared to listen to hours and hours of debate on the floor. Sessions of the Congress have lasted until far into the evening. One on rent control continued until the small hour of 5 the next morning, and every conscientious member was supposed to be in his seat. Furthermore, a congressman is also expected to do his committee duty, too.
Well, Miss Jones, where am I due next?
Congressman, I've been trying to reach you all morning. You have 3 subcommittee meetings: Armed Services, Immigration, and the District of Columbia.
Yes, well?
Well, what I've been trying to tell you is they're all meeting at once.
What?
That's right. They're all called for 3:00 this afternoon. What are you going to do?
Do? What I ought to do is to get myself defeated in the next election. But right now, I'll run from one committee to the other and back again and see if I can catch up on what happens in between.
But, Congressman, there's the delegation.
Call my wife and tell her to expect me when she sees.
In addition to attendance at regular sessions and meeting of its committees and subcommittees, the congressman is subject to 2 other daily pressures: lobbyists and constituents. Let's take the first. Senator Holly M. Kilgore of West Virginia, writing about lobbyists recently in the Reader's Digest under the title
My Daily Obstacle Calls,
made this estimate.
For every member of Congress, there are now 20 swarming lobbyists in Washington. On an average legislative day, well, by the time I'm dressed, 6 persons will have phoned about legislation. And at my breakfast table, there's a mountain of mail, most of it from lobbyists, who apparently believe I am more receptive to their pressure at home than in the office. And when I arrive at the Senate office building at 9 a.m., waiting lobbyists occupy every chair in my reception room.
Good morning, Senator.
Even his sleeping hours, according to the senator from West Virginia, are not sacred to these ever-present shadows.
Hello?
Hello, Senator. This is Joe Loban. I knew you'd be busy on the Senate floor all day, so I didn't want to bother you then. But I want to ask you how you stand on the new housing bill.
That conversation took place at 2:00 in the morning. To these demands by the lobbyists on the congressman's time, add the recurring need to meet with his constituents who sent him to represent them in Washington, and who are rarely disposed to let him forget it. Most congressmen grapple with this problem willingly and do their utmost to help the folks from back home, whether they voted for them or not.
Come in, Ted. Sit down. Have a cigar and tell me all about it.
Well, Congressman, I know you're a busy man, but I had to see you about this.
Sure, Ted. What's on your mind?
It all started when they built that Air Force base over near us in the Plains section.
Yes, what happened?
Well, sir, the other day it happened for the umpteenth time. One of them Army planes flew so low over my farm that my stock was thrown in a panic. Ran around like crazy. This time one of my horses broke his leg and we had to shoot him.
That's too bad.
Sure is. I don't want to stop the Army from flying, what with the Russians acting up the way they are. But I'd sure appreciate it, Congressman, if you'd keep them from flying so low over my land and find somebody to pay me for my horse.
By dint of a private bill introduced by the congressman, the Army was warned, the farmer reimbursed. Some congressmen find other ways to keep their constituents happy.
We got the nicest congressman. Every time anybody hereabouts gets born, or has a birthday, or graduates, or marries, or dies, he gets a suitable letter
showing that even though our congressman is way off in Washington, he hasn't forgotten about us folks back home. Of course, once he did get mixed up and congratulated a grandmother on the birth of twins. But it's all in the thought. That's what I say.
One caller who pays a daily visit to every congressman without fail is the postman. And when he goes away again, his sack is usually empty. As one congressman puts it,
the people are all born with a pen and my address.
It has been estimated that the average representative gets 90 letters a day, the average senator 325, while some are overwhelmed by as many as 1,000. And during a time of crucial issues, it's not uncommon for 500 telegrams to pour in a single hour. Practically all require answers, and they vary from sensible letters on sensible problems, such as...
I'm asking you to give your support to the fight against inflation for the following reasons.
To letters that defy a sensible answer.
I want you to introduce a bill to make me a full admiral in the Navy and send me over to the Pacific in a battleship so that I can stop the fighting in Korea. Unless you do this...
Yes, the average congressman gets more mail in one day than Webster and Clay combined received in an entire session. And in the words of Representative Short...
Perhaps that's the reason we don't have many Websters or Clays nowadays. Members don't have time for study and reflection.
Time, then, in Washington is of the essence. And to secure his fair share of it, one congressman reports...
I keep my name out of the phone book so that I can at least have Sunday with my family.
And another clutches a tiny napkin and a thin-stemmed glass and declares...
Yeah, the trouble with Washington is that there's too little time for work and too much for cocktail parties. Something ought to be done to get these cocktail hostesses off our necks.
In a constant battle with time, most senators go about their business with the courage of beavers before a flood. Seen, a prominent senator preparing for his speech in the current great debate on our foreign policy.
Those charts are done, Senator. What now?
Where's the rest of the staff?
Well, Bill's at the Navy and Tracy at the legislative branch of the library. Charlie went over to the Pentagon, Roots at Federal Security.
What's the matter with everybody? How are we ever going to get done if we take that long? Look, I want to make another statement for the record on our foreign policy in Asia, so I want you to get me the latest information on the internal situation in Indochina, Malaya, Burma, Thailand, Indonesia.
So anxious was another member of Congress to operate efficiently and get the most out of his staff that he proposed...
Here's my plan, boys and girls... I'm going to put this staff on a 24-hour day schedule and stagger these hours so there'll be someone on the job here all the time. Then we won't have to wait on anyone to finish up his work before we can go ahead. It will be ready when the next one arrives to take over. So, Joe, I've got you down for the 9 in the evening to 5 in the morning shift. Mildred, you come in at 5 and work...
It was a truly disappointed senator who discovered, after a brief try... that his hopeful 24-hour plan made absolutely no difference. Checking and double-checking under this pressure of time is almost second nature to men whose words are under the constant scrutiny of the press. Now, this story may be apocryphal, but it seems that a congressman once sent a new aide to get in the date of the next Army-Navy game.
Congressman, the Navy says the game will be played the last Saturday in November, the 28th.
Oh, they did, eh? That's what the Navy said. Well, what did the Army say?
Congressmen, too, can be forgiven for being forgetful as they race from one task to the other. One once boarded a train on his way to make a speech, and just as his train was about to pull out of Union Station, he was overtaken by his breathless secretary.
Oh, Congressman, you forgot your speech.
Okay, but why didn't you bring my teeth? You know I can't make a speech without my teeth.
Thus it goes, with a congressional physician quoted as reporting,
at the end of a day on the Hill, my supply of headache pills is usually exhausted.
This, then, is the lot of the people's choice in the nation's Congress, America. And that you may receive as authoritative an appraisal as we can provide of the job they do, we turn now to our NBC correspondents in Washington, who, from their long service at WRC in the nation's capital, have known a succession of congresses and congressmen intimately. First, Richard Harkness.
Yes, sir. Members of Congress are misunderstood men. Like the senator, for instance, who was reelected term after term. He had to remember to vote against every tax bill and for every appropriation.
Earl Godwin.
Congressmen have two characteristics. They never tire of people, and no matter how busy they are never too busy to make a constituent feel he's just the man the congressman wants to see.
Lee Feed.
It seems to me that your good senator or representative is a fellow who's a bear for work, has plenty of horse sense, kicks like a mule when a lobbyist tries to control his votes, refuses to have anything to do with political red herrings, and then when he's all worn out and dog-tired, fights like a tiger and gets himself reelected.
These are the opinions of NBC's own correspondents in Washington. For our final word, however, let us turn to one with more right to speak on this subject than any man living today. The first citizen of Paducah, Kentucky, the second citizen of the land, who has served successively in every Congress since the 63rd. Ladies and gentlemen, the Vice President of the United States, Alvin W. Barkley.
I have served in the Congress of the United States for a little more than 38 years. I have been a representative in the House of Representatives and a senator in the Senate, over which I now preside. I have, as a result, met and known congressmen of both political parties throughout a long succession of Congresses. What is my opinion of them? Just this. With rare exceptions, the congressmen I have known, Democrats and Republicans alike, have all been hard-working citizens of the highest American type to be found in the communities which they represent. Devoted to their country and to the right as they see the right. Those who have served in the Congress and have gone deserve our warmest thanks. And those who serve in the Congress today deserve from all of us sympathetic understanding of the problems they face. Such as this National Broadcasting Company program has sought to give you. Congressmen are people, and because they are, they need every bit of cooperation you can give or find it possible to give them through these, which I regard as the most critical days and times in the whole history of the United States.
The People's Choice was produced by the Program Unit for Living 1951 under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Today's script was written by Lou Hazem. Your narrator was Ben Grauer. The program was directed by Fred Way. Our thanks to NBC Washington for an assist with research and recordings for today's program. Listen next week at this time to another chapter in Living 1951. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.